Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. In today's show, we'll look at Heathrow as the government announces that it will be expanded. We ask how it was that green politics failed to stop the green light. We'll also discuss how Britain has responded to the grisly situation in Gaza. Finally, as Barack Obama gets ready to take up that new job as leader of the free world, we'll ask which of the British parties is best placed to exploit his promise of change. Joining me to discuss these matters are three of The Guardian's very finest analytical minds. We have Georgina Henry, our executive comment editor. We're joined by The Guardian columnist, broadcaster and undercover novelist, Jonathan Friedland. And finally, we're in the company of our political correspondent, Allegra Stratton. Hello all, and welcome to The Guardian's brand spanking new studios in King's Cross, with quite a view.
It's a little grey this morning, but...
This isn't the best view, the building office.
Can't please some people. The sounds of protesters at Heathrow this week, trying to stop airport expansion. The press suggested that, unlike the PM, several ministers shared the protesters' point of view. But now we know the third runway will be built. Allegra, give us the details. What's been agreed?
Well, there was a very breathless briefing at about 11 o'clock last night. They'd all been, it does seem like they'd all been in lockdown. The sort of two cabinet ministers that we all latched onto as having voiced rebellion, Hilary Benn and Ed Miliband, even their camps weren't talking over the last few days. You'd ring and ring and ring and they wouldn't return your call. And then suddenly they could ring last night. And they do seem pleased. They're briefing it as a green Heathrow. It won't be enough for the chanting voices that we just heard. And it won't be enough. I mean, I've just been talking to Labour MPs who are in West London, who have a particular sort of, in a way, a different issue with the expansion of Heathrow. It won't be enough for them, but I did get the sense from last night, more will emerge this afternoon, but I did get the sense that they feel they've extracted from the teeth of defeat, they've extracted quite significant concessions, such as BAA are only going to get half the slots they wanted, and any extra slots will have to be to meet carbon emissions. Some people will say they're weasel words. What kind of aircraft is a kind of nice aircraft? But Ed Miliband's camp last night was certainly very pleased. Interestingly, I said, what about the EU targets? At the moment, we've got an abrogation from meeting them till 2015. But then we'll have to meet them after that point. And we know that Hilary Benn has voiced concerns about that. They said, not sure about that. So I'm not sure whether Hilary is necessarily as pleased as Ed is.
But this is still airport expansion, isn't it? I mean, Georgina.
It was always going to be airport expansion, and it was about what concessions they got. There was no way this government was not going to go ahead with it after all the indications we've had from, I mean, practically before Christmas, Gordon Brown was saying there will be an airport. And the next question is, have they prejudiced the decision and therefore case for a judicial review?
I mean, Georgina, this is airport expansion. The supposedly rebel camps within the cabinet are now said to be happy because of these concessions. But do you think this is greenwash, or do you think that carbon caps and these other things they're talking about could mean that we could have a bigger but a greener Heathrow?
No, I mean, I think it's a few bones to people that feel very strongly that actually this is an extremely bad move for the government's green credentials, whatever they were, and also for the public interest in the long term. But I sort of think the recession did for any possibility that the government might not go ahead with the third runway. I think it's just, for Gordon Brown, too big a deal in terms of infrastructure, jobs, and all of that. And I mean, he's dressed it up in the best way he can, but there is no way that this is compatible with the kind of green aims that some members of the government say they have, I think. I don't know what you think, Johnny.
I agree with that. I think it would have been very interesting to know what kind of decision they would have made if this had been a year ago. So, in other words, we weren't in a credit crunch, financial crisis environment. In this environment, anything versus helping the economy, the anything is always going to lose because I think he probably believes that in voters' minds, helping the economy trumps all other concerns. Mm-hmm. And you can see this even in what's happening on the Tory side, the green agenda, which at the beginning of David Cameron's tenure was going to be the defining creed of the Tory party, has receded a bit. So it's interesting that because of how far off into the future this is, I mean, the head of Greenpeace was saying this is never going to happen anyway because this is 2015 and beyond. There might have been a temptation temptation in the government to actually score some points just by saying, OK, yeah, we're not going to do it because it's not going to happen anyway. But they haven't done that. And that must be because they calculate
the sort of post office card account. There, you know, there have been things in recent months where they've done what we wanted them to do, you know, and it's been really surprising. And there's been harmony has broken out on the back benches and people have been smiling in the Commons. And there was a possibility that Mandelson could have a whisper in Brown's ear and say, you know, the business want this, but it would be really smart. But I think that in a way this... In the way that would have been politics, this decision is also politics in that they want to say to probably Tory-leaning businessmen we're the party of business. And they say, people have been saying to me, that there's enough in this package, the government say, Downing Street say, that will make it very difficult for a Tory party that wants high-speed rail to vote against it. And so this is not just a sort of long durée, this is for 10 years' time in the future of the country. This is also, what's the Tory party going to do?
I think that's right, because, I mean, I think it's sort of wishful thinking to think the Tories are now going to overturn it. I mean, they'll be able to dress it up a bit with the rail stuff and so on. I mean, I think it's interesting about, you just sort of think, what's Gordon Brown's sort of vision for when you come out of recession? Because, I mean, he's always made the point that this is important for the city, the financial sector, and you just feel it's kind of still quite old thinking in terms of the importance as that for that sort of hub. And actually, when you try and think, well, has this recession shaken the old foundations of a lot of that thinking? Is new thinking going to emerge? My sense is that actually this proves that it's pretty much old thinking rules the day still.
Well, I mean, it seems like spin, I suppose, Johnny, doesn't it? I mean, if you're saying that the building work, the bulldozers aren't actually going to be moving for several years, and no one thinks the recession's going to last for more than 2 or 3 years at the very worst, then this is about giving the impression of doing something to the economy, not actually doing something to help the economy.
That's probably right. But I don't think it was necessarily as a job creation scheme, as a kind of economic stimulus that they're backing this. It's more that just anything which can wrap itself in a pro-business, pro-economy argument is going to trump anything else when people are thinking the economy is the central issue. You know, in all polling, that's the number one issue. And environmental concerns have slid way down. So therefore, you just want to seem as if you're acting on the economy. I think the other thing, which is if he had gone the other way, you'd have then begun thinking, okay, they're sort of imagining that come the time this is going to happen, they're not going to be in government anymore. We'd have started saying that they're beginning to do gestures because they know they're going to lose. And this is a way of him signalling, look, I'm still in it for the long haul. I think I'm going to be making these decisions.
I mean, they've got a fight on their hands still. I mean, you know, the planning process for this is, I mean, there's a lot to still go through. I mean, ultimately, you know, we all seem to agree that it will probably happen, but they've got a bit of a fight on their hands, and it'll be interesting to see how that sort of plays out.
And I love the way that they keep saying there will be no vote in the House of Commons. There's something called an opposition debate, and there will be. I mean, the opposition will force it. They will get something from them, and there will be some register on the floor of the House of Commons that most of them don't want it.
And now we've got Greenpeace and others buying up fields, Georgina, haven't we? I mean, do you think so that will make any difference?
Well, it's a great story for us. I mean, I think that the Green movement is quite sophisticated. I think they have a lot of support. I think they've thought about this a lot. I mean, in the end, you've got, you know, which is the bigger force, and government, you know, we know is a very, very sort of strong thing. It can bulldozer a lot of stuff through. And Big Carbon is a very powerful lobby too. But I think the Green movement has shown in recent years quite how canny and sophisticated it can be. So, I mean, I think it'll be very interesting to watch.
The conflict in Gaza is now into its third week. Over 1,000 Palestinians have been killed and some 4,500 have been injured. 13 Israelis have also died, including 3 civilians. This week, John Ging of the UN Relief Agency pleaded for a ceasefire as rockets from Lebanon hit northern Israel and aircraft attacked a Gaza City cemetery.
The situation here is horrific for everybody, and of course it starts with the guns falling silent. By whatever agreement, the guns must fall silent first, and then we can start to proceed and move forward. But without that, it's going to be more death, more injury and more destruction.
But what should Britain do to stop the carnage? Yesterday, The Guardian ran a leader calling on David Miliband to drag the Israeli ambassador in for a stern conversation without coffee. Georgina Henry, do you think that would really make any difference?
Well, I think it's a symbolic. It would have a symbolic meaning, and I think that would sort of go around the world if one of the governments, of the Quartet, or, you know, if Britain with its sort of historical sort of role in all of this, was to do something like that, I think it would register strong disapproval. I mean, I don't think Israel's going to rush to stop its action or anything. I mean, there's obviously a much wider role for the United States in that. But I think it would symbolically indicate that Britain was really fed up with this, and that you know, they would like an urgent sort of addressing of the issue about whether there should be a ceasefire. Whether Britain can have any sort of role alone, I think is really debatable. But it is, on the other hand, part of the quartet. It is a member of the European Union. They do have a role in policy towards Israel.
But is there anything, Georgina, other than a stern conversation that you'd like to see the Foreign Secretary doing?
Well, I mean, I think they should be much stronger in their condemnation of what's happened. I think they should call much more vociferously for a ceasefire. I think that they could be talking quite helpfully about whether or not Hamas should be brought into a discussion. I think I think they could be doing more. I think Sarkozy of France has shown much more active role diplomatically. He's been jetting around the place. I feel that our government's reaction has been pretty small beer.
It's really interesting you say that, because there's a couple of ministers that we sort of go to and we say, but surely you must be angry. And one of them said to me, who one would expect to be angry and is privately angry, and he said, there is nothing more we can do short of outright condemnation of Israel, and we won't do that because look at what happened to Sarkozy. I'm like, well, is he really, has it really suffered that much? And I think the problem with it sort of internally is that everyone's casting it as better than Lebanon 2006. So it's better. So their stance is better.
And there is a difference. Better in what way? That the British government's
position.
Yeah,
because you had this sort of terrible, at the time, it's not a value-laden statement. It was terrible how Blair didn't come out for however many weeks and say, there should be a ceasefire. And we had the immediate call. And the way that people, the shorthand is, there's been an immediate call for a ceasefire and the use of the word disproportionate. What more could you ask for?
Brown was obviously very, very conscious, wasn't he, that he wasn't going to make the same mistake, if you like, that Blair made in 2006. He wasn't going to leave himself vulnerable to criticism from the left that he was sitting on his hands during this terrible carnage. And so therefore he did absolutely come out straight away for ceasefire. And David Miliband, I'm told, has been working very, round the clock, as people say.
And remember his role in Lebanon 2006.
He was the guy around the cabinet table who said, where does this lead?
Didn't they wait, just on whether he came out straight away, didn't they wait a few days before they used this D word, disproportionate, that always seems to come up?
They may have waited on disproportionate. And actually, interestingly, some of the critics, avoid that word. They don't think that's the issue about proportionate. It can be a bit of a dead end, that issue. Because, as some people sort of say, what, would it be okay if Israel fired exactly the same number of shells as Hamas have fired? That's not really the point about proportionality. The point is, what is actually, this is a wholly, in my view, futile exercise, and a lot of people are dying needlessly. And so I think you can get in sort of wrapped up in knots with proportionality. But I wanted to pick up your thing about what could Britain do? Because often we go through these contortions of imagining all the different diplomatic manoeuvres we could make. There's something extremely straightforward, which is people deplore the blockade of Gaza, which is really choking the life and has done for the last 18 months of the people of Gaza. Now, in a lot of the commentary, you would think that it's just Israel imposing that blockade. But the fact is, it's actually Israel, the European Union, and the United States. All three are party to this blockade, and all three have a ban, an embargo, on even so much as talking to Hamas. Britain, surprise, surprise, is part of the EU. So if we think this blockade is a problem, forget the violence for a moment, ceasefire, we could immediately just, and David Miliband could, and Gordon Brown could, use the councils of the European Union and say, enough with this blockade, we shouldn't be party to it. And that you don't have to go through the hoops of sitting down without coffee. Mm. You can just say, we don't want to be party to this blockade. It doesn't work.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that's a very simple thing to do. And I think it's constantly underplayed, the role that Britain has within the European Union on this matter. As Johnny says, this is a kind of widely shared blockade, as it were, and Britain could be much, much more expressive about that.
They would say that the movement yesterday on the suspension of the EU-Israel association agreement, that was put to me by Labour MPs as, this movement, that's fantastic. But the other thing they also point to is Mark Mallet Brown's statement in the House of Lords 2 days ago or a day ago, whenever he did it. And at the end of it, he says, in response to a question from another Lord, we would, if Hamas were to be part of a government of national unity, we would welcome that. And that is being taken as one of the key baby steps you need, which is positive noises about the possibility of talking to Hamas, something that, is a kind of third rail issue.
Johnny, can I just you've made the point that the big issue here is this blockade, this embargo, and that's involves Europe and the US as well as Israel. The Guardian's editorial yesterday accused Israel of turning its back on global opinion. In the context of what you've just said, do you think that's unfair?
Well, it is frustrating the way that Israel has this sort of approach, which is if you criticize their conduct immediately, you can be put in a category of those countries that just don't understand Israel or its needs, and we won't talk to you. And this is partly why Blair always felt you have to remain engaged, because then you get a seat at the table, and the criticism then becomes, well, what did you get for it? You know, Sarkozy's approach is very interesting, which is to hug rhetorically, you know, go around saying we love Israel and gush like that. But meanwhile, he opens up a dialogue with Hezbollah. He's done that in Beirut on a visit. He met himself a Hezbollah minister, and also even with Hamas. What different propositions?
Hezbollah and then Hamas.
Oh no, but he's also made an opening to Hamas too, through not personally the way he did with Hezbollah. They're very different propositions. You're quite right to distinguish them. But so that's been the premise. That's partly why with this business, it's interesting to hear that MPs are pleased. What you were saying about Israel-European, but I think that seems indirect to me, because it seems about saying, well, let's find a way that we can in some way have a jab at Israel. If the objective is to help the people of Gaza, help lift this blockade, that is more immediate. That's what's making life so miserable there, and we're party to it, and the other party to it as well that barely gets looked at. Again, a close ally of ours is Egypt, which is refusing to open its border, which is partly why the area is so encircled and so choked. So we're a direct ally of Egypt. Let's talk to them as well. You know, there is an immediate need here, which is in Gaza, and we are very directly involved in that, rather than these sort of rather indirect and round the houses ways of having a poke at Israel so that maybe they'll be nicer to Gaza. We're involved ourselves in choking Gaza.
You're nodding, Georgina.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think that's a very practical thing. I mean, if, you know, the blockade has crippled that area. And as Britain is not an innocent party in that, as Jonathan just said, you know, it's not Israel's fault alone.
Thank you for that. And you can read the editorial we were talking about and follow all the latest developments in the Middle East at guardian.co.uk/Gaza. Well, however big it is, Gaza is merely one in-tray item for the new president after he's sworn in on Tuesday. Michael Tomasky, editor of Guardian America, told us what he thinks we can look forward to hearing on Barack Obama's big day.
I think that the main themes of Obama's inaugural address will involve, first, laying out to people the extent of the crises that face the country, the economic crisis, first and foremost. And then second, and more importantly, I think trying to emphasize to people that we're all in this together, and that he'll try to rally people around the idea that everyone in this situation has to pitch in, everyone has to sacrifice a little bit, which is an interesting idea, because Bush sort of stayed away from the idea of sacrifice, particularly after 9/11. That's an idea that he has expounded upon in different forums over the years. It's an interesting philosophical position that goes back to a liberal idea of the commons, or the common good, you might call it, a conception that it is one nation, and that we're a civic structure in which people have to work together and sacrifice together toward a goal. Something that this country hasn't really done since the atomization of the 1960s and the 70s. And so he's going to try to do that, to bring the country together, I believe.
So the big idea, Mike says, is the common good. If he's right, Johnny, we're going to hear a message that's gone unheard in America, not just under George W. Bush, but since the Reagan Revolution.
That's true. He would, because Bill Clinton was pretty reluctant to speak in those terms. You know, he was the guy who had to say the era of big government is over in one of his big set piece speeches. So this is a very different environment Barack Obama's going into. He's going to be very aware, he probably won't say I feel the hand of history on my shoulder, but he'll be very aware that people are making comparisons with the last big inauguration during an economic crisis, which was Roosevelt in 1933. And he'll have that in his mind, I think. And we'll all be ready with our sort of, reference books at our side to make comparisons in the rhetoric and to see if he's picking up any lines or any echoes. But that, I think Mike Tomasky is right. I think he will want to appeal to some kind of notion of common humanity. And I think he'll want to do what Georgina was talking about before that Gordon Brown isn't doing, which is suggesting a new kind of approach to the economy in this new era. And it's very interesting, our discussion about Heathrow before, in which we pitted sort of the environment versus the economy. One of Obama's big themes in the lead up to the election, and even since actually in this transition period, has been to say these two are not in contradiction. They're not at odds with each other. The way we're going to get out of the economic hole is by doing the tough work of green transformation, which will create a whole lot of new jobs. And in a way, it's interesting, that difference. There is sort of old thinking this side of the Atlantic, and I think he will chart some very new thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it's going to be really interesting. I mean, first of all, he's a fantastic speech maker. So, whatever else, it's going to be a great thing to listen to. You also hope that he is one of those politicians that combines some substance with the lofty rhetoric. And he just, at the moment, on what we know about him, is doing really seriously different sort of thinking. And as John Finch just said, you know, it sort of suggests the contrast between us and them. But on the other hand, maybe Gordon Brown, who knows, will be a bit inspired by it. But I think this whole sort of theme about, you know, it's not so much big government's back, is it? It's this sort of this sense that, you know, we're all in this together and actually government can make things happen, but we can do it with you and all the rest of it. I mean, I think that's not been heard in American politics, has it, for a very, very long time.
Can I just ask, do you think either of you, whether we'll hear substance on Tuesday, or are we looking for a great Rooseveltian speech?
Well, it's not like the Queen's speech, is it, where he's going to say, my government will do this, that and the other. But I mean, I think most people are assuming, aren't they? I mean, what do you think? You've heard a few of them before.
Yeah, no, it won't be programmatic. I mean, it won't be, where he gives dollars and cents figures for budgets and programmes, because that's just seemed to sort of lower the tone of the occasion. But he'll give clues, I think, to his big objectives. You know, it's the sort of speech in which you would say, Kennedy actually didn't do it in an inaugural speech, but, you know, if you're going to put a man on the moon, it's that sort of big, lofty aims. And they will invoke those sorts of, I think he'll want to say how the world will be different in 4 years if his presidency goes to plan.
And you think he'll link that.
And there'll be a big section on the Allegra's right about how important the economy is in politics at the moment. So that will be the first section, as Mike Damasky was also saying. And so after that, I think there'll be a big section on the world. I think he'll want to send a message to all the other countries abroad that we're back. After the unilateralism of George W. Bush, I think he'll signal a kind of retreat from the crude sort of freedom spreading but at the at the barrel of a gun message and
smoking.
Approach of George W. Bush, and then I think I think there'll be clues as to what he's going to do without it being very sort of prescriptive and programmatic.
Allegra, during the campaign, Obama's talk really was of change, which sounded great but didn't necessarily mean all that much, and the Conservatives cheekily picked up on it. But now he's going to start getting specific, if not on Tuesday. He's got to do that quite soon. And if Mike Tomasky's right, he might emerge as a bit of a lefty. How do you think that...
Of course he will. I mean, it's so interesting, the attempt. I don't want to be too glib about it. The idea that the Tories are the change party. Somebody asked me this yesterday, is Obama more like Brown or more like Cameron if you put age to one side? And you'd actually, if you sort of Dreams from My Father, the best book ever written, it's fantastically written and it's a great story. And there actually are some similar. I think he's more like Brown, and it's not just politics. It's also sort of his personality is more like Brown. You know, he's done some seriously hard graft in the Badlands of Chicago, etc. Brown has done some seriously hard graft in the Badlands of Kirkcaldy and et cetera. And the idea that he's like Cameron is mad. But in terms of the politics as well, I mean, MPs are already saying to me, you know, we mustn't expect too much of Obama, because already the mood has shifted a bit. A big, big, you know, what is he going to do on the Middle East? There's a reason why he's been silent, and it's not just etiquette. And for instance, on the green economy, well, we know that there's going to be a big Mandelson-Miliband green economy speech as soon as Obama's sat down. Not quite as soon as he sat down. So there will be an attempt for the government to say, we're excited, look how excited we are, and we're doing some similar policies. Fiscal stimulus plan, Brown can't wait. Because you know, he's come up with this, he's coming for enormous political stick from the Tories. That's why he's in Germany today, smiling as much as he is, because Merkel's finally had to go ahead with it too. They can't wait. And on Gaza, for instance, there is a sense, and I've put it to them, are you just waiting for Obama? No. But I think in many ways things have been on pause.
I mean, I wonder whether they're feeling more confident now in talking about the role of government. There was this stuff on social mobility this week.
I know what you're saying. I don't think so.
You don't think Labour's any more confident?
Well, Obama has been president in their minds for quite a while, for since November. So, and you know, and so much has happened since then. You've had the PBR, so I don't think it is a confidence of the last few weeks.
This will be a really interesting thing to watch in politics, I think, which is the extent to which Obama, and Allegra's right, they've already got used to it, but as he does things, starts doing more and more things, to which he becomes a kind of seal of approval for a whole lot of ideas that have been taboo in British politics for a long time, like the active state.
We've already got a higher rate of income tax.
He's put a seal on that and legitimised that. And I think that could keep happening, and I think it's probably right that Cameron will end up on the wrong side of that more often than he's on the right side. He'll create this kind of political space until, in fact, Obama does something awful. it will become almost a way to end an argument, which is we're doing this, Obama's doing it, so therefore it's okay. You know, if he says it's okay, it's okay. I'm still just very intrigued and want to have fun with this notion of Obama being quite like Brown.
I mean,
I think it's a fun game. Which one of them is more like? I mean, in the sense that they are, you know, bookish. They read a lot and they studied very hard and they come from very, you know, humble upbrunning with
Gordon
very strong
running. I mean, Who knows that Obama's
right.
In dreams from my father, Obama comes. There's that passage where somebody says, "You're just turning into such a bore."
Yes. And he had this very sort of monastic life, you know, just reading and studying very, very hard. On the other hand, the sort of gilded and rapid rise to the top would be like Cameron, you know. And they do say about Obama that he's like the kind of the new kid who arrives at the school who immediately is the cleverest guy in the class and all the girls love him, you know. And that is what sort of how Cameron just rose to become leader within 4 years of being elected into the Commons. So, but it's a very, very good parlour game. I think we should play it much more often.
I think on the economy, he has. The fact that Obama is the fiscal the stimulus packages and so on is hugely important for Brown has sort of opened up masses on that. On the social mobility question, I'm not sure that's something Obama's going to spend. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on that, but whether it'll be anything like is being announced this week by Harriet Harman. But I think there'll be plenty for people to be disappointed in, though, so I don't think it's all going to be one way. And I think international politics is not still going to be quite where many Guardian readers would like Obama to be. But we shall see.
Because, I mean, for instance, he wants troops in Afghanistan, doesn't he?
There's the Afghanistan issue, the Gaza issue, etc.
Sadly, that's what tends to happen in the end with political heroes. They disappoint. And Politics Weekly also disappoints by coming to its inevitable end. But if you're still craving for more, further fixes are available throughout the day on guardian.co.uk politics. And you can leave your thoughts on today's programme on the New Politics blog. Thanks to all my guests, Georgina Henry, Jonathan Friedland and Allegra Stratton. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Tom Clark. Until next week, goodbye.